Let me just list for you the three top grossing movies this summer. Guardians of the Galaxy from Marvel Comics, Spider-Man, and Wonder Woman.
Be careful of mankind, Diana. They do not deserve you.
Superheroes rule. Meanwhile, organized religion has declined in this country. Is that a coincidence? Or are superheroes our new religion? Here to think about that question are two authors, Reza Aslan, whose new book is God, A Human History, and Seattle writer Willow Wilson, author of the latest Ms. Marvel series. Willow, Reza, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Are superheroes, in any sense, replacing religion in American culture? Who wants to tackle that first question?
Well, I think superheroes are modeled after the ancient gods. I mean, I think this has been written about repeatedly by psychologists, by cultural theorists. I mean, when we look at, the sort of original superheroes, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, particularly the fact that these characters were created, in the 40s, either in the run-up to the Second World War, immediately afterwards. They were often created by Jewish writers, Jewish artists, who were very much steeped in, this concept of God as a superhuman being. And in many ways, as Jung himself, famously said, a lot of these conceptions of superhuman beings, that is, beings who look and feel and act and think like human beings do, but who have some spectacular ability, that is an archetype. It is something that is deeply ingrained in our consciousness. It's how the gods arose in the first place. And so in many ways, what we're seeing now, not just with the prevalence of superheroes on screen, but with this just sort of overwhelming interest in these comic book superhero figures, is just a return to a much more ancient, much more primal spirituality.
Okay, so Willow, superheroes have always plucked that religious type of string in us. What about these days? You are the creator of a modern superhero. Do you find any connection between decline of organized religion, rise of the love/worship of superheroes in their movies?
I think it's a very interesting question. I think certainly we're at an age when we are questioning whether the moral contracts and the ethical contracts set forth by organized religion are still relevant. Do they still have something to offer us? There's a lot of debate and controversy there. A lot of people are leaving religion, and there's a great deal of skepticism. And wrapped up in that is the idea that, well, we still need, as a society, some kind of moral framework, ethical framework, in which we can agree about how to treat each other. And that's a lot of what superhero comics have traditionally been about. Superheroes teach us how to be good. They're, in many ways, the art form in which we decide what that means. We decide what it is that one should do with one's time on Earth, with the powers that one is given. And superheroes just kind of amp up those ordinary questions to the nth degree, because now it's no longer about, well, what can you as one single ordinary person do to make the world a better place? It's about, well, what if you had kind of unlimited power? Then what would you do? So in many ways, superhero comics ask and answer the same kinds of questions that mythology and religion do.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily say that what we're seeing is because of the decline of one, we're seeing directly as a result of that, the rise of another. Because look, the most important thing to understand about the way that we conceptualize the gods is that that conception is utterly dependent upon the world in which we live and the context in which we live. And that's certainly true when it comes to superheroes. I mean, when you look at, the two of the most popular superheroes of all time, Superman and Captain America, both of which, again, created in the 40s, both created very much in the context of this horrific good versus evil global world war, and both of which were created in order to address, that sense of evil from a position of good. These are the two most boring, just the absolute worst superheroes. I mean, no.
Why are they bad?
They're terrible because there's nothing interesting about either of them. They're just too good. And so what have we seen in the last decade or so is that both of these characters, the last two decades, both of these characters have been utterly reconceptualized, redesigned for a much darker world, a world in which good and evil are not so easy to decide. And so you see the resurgence of Superman, you know, in the DC films, the fact that, you know, he died in the last movie, right? So something interesting finally happened to him. And Captain America, you know, Captain America's narrative arc has been transformed by the fact that, you know, he lives in a world in which the binary of good and evil, out of which he originally arose, just no longer holds. And so he himself has to struggle with recognizing the gray areas in his consciousness. And then to the point now where, you know, the narrative of him actually being a Hydra agent, et cetera, et cetera. We have to make these characters interesting by making them reflect the morality of the world in which we live in. And that's exactly what we do with the gods.
You just gave me a great idea for my tombstone. Something interesting finally happened to him. I want yes. that on my tombstone. Willow, will you please tell us the creation story of your Ms. Marvel, which is what, 3 years ago now?
Oh, it's almost 5 years ago.
Yeah. Tell us about that. You got to create one and then the reaction to it. An almost religious fervor among some people, the reaction to it.
You could call it that. So the way that Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, which is her current incarnation, came about was when I got a call now nearly 5 years ago from Sana Amanat and her editor, Stephen Wacker, at Marvel Comics, out of the blue. And they kind of pitched me this very simple idea, which was, we want to create a new young American Muslim superheroine from scratch and put her on her own ongoing monthly series. And, you know, as they were saying this to me, I really thought they were nuts because mm-hmm. I would never have pitched this idea in a million years. I mean, I'd been writing comics at that point for, you know, over half a decade. And so I was not unfamiliar with hate mail mm-hmm. and with sort of the inherent stigma and kind of the contradiction that people perceived in being a Muslim writer in a visual medium like comics. And I was like, are you sure? Are you really sure? You really want to do this? And they were sure. And they said, yes, let's do it. The character had no name, no background, no power set, no costume. And so I really got to get in on the ground floor and see what it was like to create a superhero from scratch, which was very, very, very different from working with superheroes who, in some cases, like that of Superman, have 75 years of history and their powers are set in stone. Everybody's familiar with some aspect of their story. And so to try to create a mythology like that, a modern mythology, from the ground up was very, very interesting. And to see the response just kind of blew me away. I think we all assumed that the series would be over within 7 issues, that there was no way it was going to succeed. And in fact, the first issue went into 8 printings. And the digital edition of that issue was at the time, and may remain, I'm not exactly sure, the highest selling digital issue that Marvel had ever put out.
What is Ms. Marvel's power set?
So Ms. Marvel, the current Ms.
Kamala Khan.
Kamala Khan is what we call a polymorph. She can grow and shrink. She can get kind of Hulk-sized and shrink down to about the size of a, you know, a Barbie doll. And what she's...
A Barbie doll.
Yeah. I mean, if we were to make an approximate comparison. And kind of what she's best known for in her fight scenes is embiggening, quote unquote, her fists. So she'll get these kind of supersized fists with which to kind of humorously bonk supervillains in the face and send them flying. Because it is a YA comic. So I think all of us involved wanted something that was fun and visually interesting, but at the same time was not the Punisher, you know, was not gore and violence and didn't want to give her kind of bloody powers.
Reza Aslan is here, author of God, A Human History. What was God's original set of superpowers?
Well, so the thesis of the book is that we essentially conceive of God, whether you believe in one God or many gods or actually no God at all, as a divine version of ourselves. So the very process through which the concept of God arose in human evolution compels us to give God our own traits, both good and bad. And partly this, you know, can be seen most clearly, of course, in polytheistic traditions, you know, and this is very much in line with what we're talking about here with
yes.
superheroes and, you know, the different
the comic powers. Book universes don't have one uber god. It's more like the Greek gods.
That's right.
In a way.
That's right. That each superhero not only has a set of powers, but a distinct personality, a trait, very much as we see in sort of the Mesopotamian or Egyptian or Greek pantheon of gods. And so in many ways, you know, when we talk about early conceptions of the divine, they were basically superheroes. They were basically the way that we understand them now. I mean, people who looked like human beings, who acted like human beings, who had human emotions, who had human motivations, but with a distinct superpower. And I think that in a sense, that conception is hardwired into our brains. It's why I believe that we have such a natural propensity for stories about superheroes, because in many ways it's part of our DNA. Whether you yourself are a believer or not, you have certain cognitive processes that force you to think in these kinds of terms, to divinize yourself, if you will. And so we naturally gravitate towards gods and superheroes that in one way or another reflect our own personalities, that reflect our virtues and our vices, our strengths and our weaknesses.
But why did we go from a Mesopotamian-style superhero pantheon to an uber god in the Yahweh, God, Allah
right.
tradition? Why did that happen?
Well, first of all, it took hundreds of thousands of years for that to happen. I mean, if you look at, if you can trace spiritual history, humanity's spiritual history, you can trace it, you know, with some measure of confidence, at least 300, 400, 500,000 years. And over those 500,000 years, the concept of a singular God is barely 3,000 years old. And by the way, it's not that the concept of a singular God didn't arise occasionally in human history. It's just that when it did, it was routinely rejected, sometimes violently.
Not as box office poison.
It's box office poison because of the very simple fact that while human beings are comfortable with accepting conflicting and contradictory traits within themselves, they have a very difficult time accepting that in their concept of the divine. It makes much more sense to have a God for each of our attributes than to have one God that holds all of our attributes, both positive and negative. The only reason, by the way, that monotheism stuck finally within the Israelite tradition, and it's important to understand that for thousands of years, the Jews were not monotheistic. Abraham is not monotheistic. Moses is not monotheistic in the Bible. It really wasn't until the so-called Babylonian exile when the Jews were facing an existential crisis, a crisis that made them had to make a decision between whether their God was dead and gone, destroyed by a stronger God, Marduk, of the Babylonians, or that there was only one God and that their God was punishing them, and they chose the latter. And that's when sort of monotheism first started to take hold in human spirituality. But again, that Jewish conception of God is quite different than the far more successful Christian conception of God, because the Jewish conception of God is both good and evil, is both dark and light, has positive and negative traits, is responsible for great acts of compassion and also responsible for horrific acts of violence. The Christian take on that Jewish God requires another character,
yes.
And that character is the devil. So we need someone to take away all of the evil things, all the dark things about God, so that we can have a God who's like Superman, just pure, boring good.
Willow, how does Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel's being Muslim, fit in here? Like, what is religious about that character in practice?
So we depict, and I use the royal we when I talk about Kamala because it's a team of five people from month to month.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, it's me. It's an editor. It's an assistant editor, an artist, a colorist. So yeah, it's a whole team of people. So I default to we. I'm not actually the Queen of England.
I see.
You know, in the series, Kamala is depicted as coming from a fairly traditionalist Pakistani-American family. They're coded as Sunni. We don't say that explicitly, but that's sort of how they're portrayed. Within her family, there's quite a bit of variety in terms of belief and practice. Her brother is, very conservative, dresses in sort of traditional clothes.
Prays a lot.
Yeah, very diligent about prayer, very ethically upright in a way that actually kind of grates on the family sometimes. Mm-hmm. Her father is less so and more interested in Kamala's success at school and wants her to focus on that. And Kamala herself is very much like many American Muslim teenage girls in that she incorporates many different influences into her life. Her religion and her family background is important to her, but she also writes fan fiction and is, a video game geek, and we see her playing sort of a fictionalized version of World of Warcraft.
But how does it work to have a superhero who worships a god in within the superhero world? I'm neither religious nor do I know much about superheroes, so you've got to help me understand. How does that work that a superhero worships a higher being?
Well, being
the
Muslim,
highest being.
Being Muslim actually makes it quite simple.
Okay.
Because if something was born, can die, inhabits time, and has a corporeal body, then by definition, they are not God in Islam. So they can call themselves gods all they like. You know, Thor can call himself a god. Loki can call himself a god. They don't actually do that, by the way. The history of the Asgardians is much more complicated. I want to throw that out there for the hardcore comic book geeks who may be listening and being like, wow, it's actually more complicated. It is more complicated.
You gave them a voice. Like, wow, that's really more complicated.
Well, that's kind of the well, actually voice.
Yes, it is.
I feel has become universal
yes,
in recent
is.
Years. It actually makes it quite straightforward. You can have all kinds of powers in Islam. And if you look at Islamic mythology in the Alf Layla Walayla, the 1001 Nights and other epic, poems and stories, there are plenty of stories about genies or people who have quirky, weird powers. But as long as you were born and as long as you can die and you inhabit time, you are therefore not God.
But are there other superheroes who worship a god?
Oh, sure. There's famously Daredevil is a very ardent Catholic. That comes into his storyline quite a bit.
Okay.
He talks to the devil occasionally.
Captain America.
The Thing is Jewish. Yeah. The Thing from the Fantastic
right.
Four.
That I didn't know any up. Of this.
Yeah, so absolutely okay. Religion exists in the world of superheroes.
What is the, are Ressa, do you watch superhero movies? Are you any more up on...
I do.
Universe
I do.
Marvel
yeah.
and DC. What to the two of you? What is the morality in comic book movies? What are they teaching us?
I think there is no longer really one gestalt morality in superhero movies, and that's why they've become so contentious. I think really there's a great debate happening within superhero comics that mirrors what's happening in society at large. And that is, we have no longer agreed upon who is good and who is evil and for what reason. And I think because superheroes really do reflect the zeitgeist from decade to decade and reinvent themselves for each new age, what we're seeing now in superhero comics are the very same kinds of tensions that we have in society at large. And so you see...
Will you give me an example of that?
Yeah. So, Reza was talking about Captain America and the conflicts going on in that series. if you've seen the wonderful Captain America, the Winter Soldier movie, which I think is one of the best movies from that franchise, this very thing is discussed. You know, what is more important, your patriotism to your country or your loyalty to your friends? And what happens when that line is blurred? And, you know, if somebody is sort of programmed to do evil things, are they therefore evil? Must you reject them? Or can they somehow be saved? And I think the reason that this really strikes a nerve with us today, even though The Winter Soldier, I think, was written maybe like, what, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, is because we are having that discussion right now as a society.
That's what makes superhero mythologies actually matter, is that like scripture, like mythologies, religious mythologies, that they can be shaped to whatever the concerns of the present society are. I mean, you know, we've only been a written peoples for 5,000-6,000 years. Before that, our mythologies were all oral. And so they were able to be constantly changing and shifting depending on the storyteller and the people listening to the stories. So they could constantly be about whatever situation we were dealing with.
How are we dealing right now with the idea of can an evil person be saved or are they programmed? What do you mean? How are we having that today?
You know, we're looking at a world that, as I'd mentioned before, is far grayer. We're looking at situations in which our very sense of identity is shifting. You know, it's the simple nationalism that was so much a part of the post-World War II American identity just simply doesn't work anymore, particularly not in the sort of Trump age right now. We're in a world in which the borders that separate us are beginning to deteriorate. We're in a world in which information sharing is so rapid that it's becoming more and more difficult to sort of be very inflexible about who you are and what you believe. And so our mythologies, be they religious mythologies or superhero mythologies, and there's an enormous amount of connection between those two, have to reflect that world and those concerns. And the only way that our gods or our superheroes are going to continue to matter is if they can be, if they can shift to actually reflect, you know, the world in which we are currently living.
Okay, so what I do know is that Batman got dark, and that's a thing for now, for superheroes to be complicated. So that's no accident. You're saying this is what's going on in the world. I'm talking with writers Ressa Aslan and Willow Wilson about superheroes and God and now the president, since that came up. I want to talk a little about politics, because I've heard both Presidents Obama and Trump compared to religious figures for different reasons. Do you think Americans yearn for a godlike leader today any more or less than ever?
Oh, boy. What a question. I hope we don't, because that's a bad sign when you want godlike power in a temporal secular leader. Mm-hmm. But it might really be true. I think, you know, for a lot of people, there really is this desire to sort of have security and be secure in the knowledge of who and what you are, kind of above all other things, above freedom, you know, above free inquiry. We've become sort of suspicious, I think, of change in certain ways, and more afraid of the potential for upheaval. And, you know, whenever that happens, I think in history, people do start longing for these godlike leaders, because you want somebody who will just fix it. You know, but I hope that is not true, because I think that is a terribly destructive instinct.
I think the most important thing to understand about religion is that it is far more a matter of identity than it is a matter of beliefs and practices. And as a matter of identity, it naturally encompasses all the other aspects of your identity, including your nationality, your ethnicity, your race, your gender, your sexual orientation, your politics, your economic views. And so it's not a new thing that people do use religion as a shorthand for sharing the same identity, sharing the same values. I think what is probably different with regard to the Trump administration is the way in which particularly among white evangelicals, a record 81% of whom voted for Donald Trump, have been willing to essentially ignore, their traditional focus on values, on public morality, in exchange for what Trump is offering them, which is secular power.
You said something interesting there, that religion is more about identity than belief.
Always.
Do you think most religious Americans would say that their religion is more about identity than it is that they have faith, that they believe?
I think most religious Americans are not self-reflective enough. Let me put it this way. The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life says 71% of Americans are Christian. Now, do you think 71% of Americans go to church on a regular basis or read the Bible or know anything about Jesus except that he was born in a manger and died on a cross?
They could still think that they have religious faith, even if they don't read and attend.
Understand that belief isn't irrelevant in religion. It's just definitely secondary to identity. And when someone says that I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, I'm a Jew, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Hindu, they are talking about how they understand themselves in the world. I think for a lot of non-religious people, the assumption is simply that a religious person is somehow a slave to doctrine and dogma. We know that that's not the case. I mean, there is an enormous amount of variety when it comes to, you know, the acceptance and rejection of an official church dogma among any, you know, group of religious people. But often what isn't a variable is that when someone talks about their religion, what they are more often referring to is how they understand themselves in an indeterminate world. And that cannot be divorced from all the other aspects of their identity, including their nationality, including their ethnicity or their race or their politics.
We were just talking a moment ago about, we started out talking about superheroes and organized religion, and you said that modern superheroes reflect a modern zeitgeist, this complicated good, bad, and more nature. And can I try out a theory on you? You can tell me if I'm going nowhere here. But the God of Abraham was inscrutable, famously mysterious. You weren't allowed to look at God or name God, much less understand God. So I wonder if do humans crave a God figure who we're not supposed to take literally, because that would shrink that God. We don't want to challenge that leader because they tell us what truth is. And that there's always been a human desire for that. Am I off the deep end?
Do you mean by that a desire for certain knowledge? That's kind of what drives our need to worship?
I read a piece that you wrote, Reza, referring to President Trump and how his fans want to be told what the truth is. And we've all heard this before, right, that Trump voters don't take Trump— they take him seriously, but not literally. And you described him as a cult-like figure. And I want to get partisan about it. I'm more interested in the psychology, I guess, of what we want from a modern leader, and whether you see any connection there that between religion and wanting a leader that is, yeah, I don't have to fact-check. I don't want to fact-check a leader. A truly charismatic, almost godlike leader is.
Yeah. So the point of the book is that we create God in our own image, and that is an innate, unconscious impulse that we are born with and that we do whether we believe in God or not. In fact, atheists do this just as much as believers. You know, if you ask an atheist, "Tell me what you mean by God," often they will start to describe themselves. We all do that. What I'm saying with regard to the Trump phenomenon and how he has transformed a large swath of white evangelical Christianity into his own personal cult is actually not that uncommon when it comes to the kinds of political leaders that Trump fashions himself as. If it is true that we are sort of predisposed to humanizing the divine, then our easiest access to the divine is a divine human. That's what makes Christianity the most successful, the most popular religion in the world, is that it says this unconscious impulse that you have to humanize God, well, it's because God is literally a human being. So what is God? How does God feel? What does God want from you? Just imagine the most perfect human being, and that's God. Anyone can do that. It's very easy to connect to that kind of a God. With regard to characters like Trump, or really any other cult leader, and that's what he's truly become for this kind of insular group of white evangelicals that have rallied to him in a way that they've never rallied to any other politician, including to George W. Bush, who was a white evangelical, is that they see in him a sort of divine prophetic character. That's not an exaggeration. Franklin Graham, before the election, actually compared Trump positively to Abraham and Moses and David. Frank Amedia, who is one of Trump's biggest evangelical supporters, said that Trump is, quote, receiving downloads from God. Pat Robertson said that Trump's authority is the same as God's authority. And so therefore, if you disobey Trump, you are disobeying God. This isn't normal political rhetoric. This right. is the kinds of stuff that I am used to hearing from cult members. And it's part of this desire to reflect your conception of the world into a single individual. And that individual for these people has become Trump.
In the couple of minutes we have left, I would like to bring it from politics back to religion and back to superheroes. Because, Willow, the last superhero movie I saw was Wonder Woman. I took my daughter to it. I did not have a religious experience. I didn't think of it that way. If our listeners go see the new Thor movie or Justice League, is there something that you want them to think about as they watch, besides what's exploding and what innocent victims are being saved?
You know, whenever I go to a superhero movie, I am less concerned about what that movie is saying about those characters than I am about what are those characters saying about us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can be very, very interesting. If we go in with that attitude rather than just treating it as another popcorn movie, because I think these stories really are an excellent window into what we are thinking about and how we are identifying as people right now. And that can make it infinitely, infinitely more interesting.
100%. I mean, the new Thor movie is a perfect example of this. It's another example of what I was talking about before. The problem with Thor is that he was essentially semi-divine. And if he had that hammer, he was indestructible. And there's nothing fun about that. And why I think this movie was so enormously successful is that in it, we saw God's dying. We saw heaven being destroyed. You know, we saw this particular God, Thor, being weakened and having his power taken away from him. That's the world in which we live in. And that needs to be reflected in our mythologies. And the most vibrant of our mythologies right now are superheroes.
And those have to be our closing credits because of the clock on the wall. What a great conversation with Reza Aslan and Willow Wilson. Thank you both. Reza, you'll be giving a talk about your book tonight at 7:30, Seattle First Baptist Church, God, A Human History. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Seattle writer, Ms. Marvel creator, and so much more. New novel coming out this spring. Willow Wilson, thank you.
Thank you very much.